Thank you, Rick. Good singing, everybody. Always enjoy the music. Just want to mention a few things. Am I on here? Yep. Just want to mention a few things before we get into the message part of the service today. You've got an insert in your bulletins about bomber tickets, and I'm willing to take calls for that right up until Wednesday, but make sure you get that in because I want to get that in so that nobody gets left out. And whenever there's a special birthday or anniversary on Sunday, we like to mention that. And Christoph and Andrea Kerbel are celebrating. Where are you, Christoph and Andrea? You're usually over there. Oh, back there. Okay, you fooled me. Okay, you're in the dark. 40th anniversary for Christoph and Andrea today. Okay, today. So, yeah, that's great. And just a note on that capital offering that we're going to be taking next week. Aaron, our church treasurer, emailed me and gave me some numbers. And Aaron, I forgot to bring them to the pulpit, so I don't know. But he gave me the balances, and we're only about $6,500 short at this present time of our kitchen renovation. You know, in December, this was approved back a few months ago. In December, we're going to be renovating the kitchen. It's a $125,000 project. And you know what? The funds are there. Like from the previous capital fund offerings, the funds are there, except for about $6,500. And you know the way construction costs overrun. So if we get $20,000 next week, that'd be great, okay? But it's so wonderful, you know, the way that God has blessed us in this church with people who take financial stewardship seriously. And, you know, tithing is something the Bible talks about. Giving generously is something that is a hallmark of a mature Christian. And we've never been in want over these last, as long as I've been here, 17 years, and I know even before then, there's been wonderful provision from God financially for our church, even to the point that at the end of the year, we're able to send thousands of dollars off in surplus giving that we've had during the year. We're able to send thousands of dollars to other ministries and organizations that can use the financial help. So God has blessed us, and it's always it's a tribute to you and the faithfulness of God in your lives and in our lives together as a congregation. We're starting a new series today called Charting a Good Course. And, you know, this is kind of springs out of my experience this summer when Shelley and I, for our 40th anniversary, went on a trip to, you can applaud, no, never mind. But when, it's old news, okay? It was back in May. But for our 40th anniversary, we went on a trip we've been talking about for years, and that was to go to Newfoundland and Nova Scotia. And it's just, you know, I won't get into it all again. I mentioned it when I came back from the trip, but just a wonderful experience, wonderful time out there, great part of the country to visit. And the thing about Newfoundland, as you travel around there, the thing that impresses you is the, I would call it the omnipresent ocean. Everywhere you go, there's the ocean out there. You know, when you go inland, there's not much except for a bunch of trees and rocks. Inland, there's no development, no towns, no cities. It's all along the coast. And, of course, that was the economy of Newfoundland from earliest times, was the fishing off the coast. But everywhere you go, there's boats and there's lighthouses and there's fisheries and there's just all these reminders of the ocean being there. And, of course, if you go back into the history books and you find out that John Cabot sailed from Bristol, England in 1497, just a few years after Columbus made his voyage, 1497 came across and found Newfoundland and talks about the millions of codfish that they encountered, so that they were able to just lower baskets over the side of the boat and lift them up with, you know, full of codfish. And of course, when the people in Europe heard about this, they began sending their boats over and off the coast of Newfoundland became the historical fishing grounds of European nations, in fact, coming across to pick up the cod. And you know what, when you think of the fact that they would sail across that ocean, that there was one day we stood at Cape Spear, and there was a storm, and those waves were crashing in on the rocks. Just an amazing thing to watch. And as you watch some of these big ocean-going ships going out, the ones that would go out and service the Hibernia oil fields and the oil platforms out there a couple hundred miles offshore, these boats going out, and these are big boats. And the further they got out, the less and less you began to see of these boats as they would be going up and down over these swells. And it was just, it was a brand new experience for a landlubber like myself, for a mainlander. But to see that and to see the power of the ocean and just the awesomeness of it. And these early fishermen back in the 14, 15, 1600s, they would be coming across in boats that were like 70 or 80 feet long. 20 feet wide, I was told this auditorium is 40 feet wide, so 20 feet would be, you know, from here to the, I mean, waves washing over the decks of those boats, and with just crude navigation equipment. You know, they didn't have maps like we have today. They'd have a compass, they might have a sextant, and the North Star to guide them, and that was about it. But they needed to be skilled navigators in order to chart a good course to get to their destination safely. And that's kind of the picture that's in my mind today and over these next few weeks as we talk about charting a good course. Because we're leaving port. Anybody here an Imperials fan? Anybody listen to the Imperials when you were kind of growing up? You know, remember their songs? Yeah, I mean, you're dating yourself when you raise your hand for that. But, you know, my daughter made me an old school CD. She got some of these tracks from the Imperials that I don't think you can buy anymore and put them all together for me. And I was listening to it the other day, and there's one song in there called Sail On. And it says, when we're all born, we put out to sea, searching for answers continuously. I forget the rest of it. But it talks about sail on when the waters get high, sail on when the wind starts to die, sail on, it's just a matter of minutes till his ship comes to get us and we'll all get in it. And just the idea of sailing through the seas of life and charting a course. But what are you basing your course on? That's the question, and that's what we want to look at, charting a good course, because we're all sailing through this sea of life. And you're sailing through, you're hoping to get to some good destination at the end of it all. But the question is, what kind of navigational equipment are you using? That's the question. Well, the Bible is like a navigational chart, a navigational map. And you know, when you read the Bible and you know, we were saying, what's the Bible all about? Well, it's about, you know, God giving us instruction on how we can have eternal life. Absolutely, that's in there. That's why God revealed to us his word, was so that we can know him and so that we can have eternal fellowship with him for all of eternity in that new heaven and that new earth that's coming at the end of the age. But it's also full of direction and instruction for life. Because, you know, it's not just a case of, you know, get saved, believe in Jesus, get your ticket stamped, and then just kind of muddle your way along until finally you get to the place that you're trying to go. You know, there's a whole lot in between there. And as we sail through life, we want to be going in a good direction. We want to be sailing in a good way. We want to be able to say that life is working out for us. And so the Bible is full of directions and guidance and instructions and warnings to help us to live a prosperous and successful life. When Joshua was leading the Israelites across the Jordan River into the Promised Land, God spoke to him and said, "Do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth, for in this book of the law, this is how you're going to find prosperity and success." That's an amazing statement. There are basic, fundamental, absolutely bedrock foundational principles in God's word that we need to abide by and adhere to in order to chart a good course. We're going to be looking in the book of Proverbs. I do this probably about once a year. We just go to the book of Proverbs and we draw principles out of there. And there's instruction in Proverbs regarding family life, regarding politics, regarding your finances, regarding your friendships and relationships that you have with people. There's instruction for work. There's instruction for how you speak, how you use your tongue. And there's instructions in there about our relationship with God as well. We want to look at these topics over the next few weeks. And the first thing that we want to look at is this, from the principles that we're going to look at today from Proverbs chapter 1. The first one is this, that a good course is set by wisdom and discipline. You need wisdom and discipline to keep on course, to make it through life, to be able to sail this ocean of life and get to a good destination. You know, those early seafarers, they needed wisdom and discipline. And I'll tell you, when you think of how they sailed across the ocean in those little craft, at the mercy of the wind and the waves, it increases my admiration for them. They needed wisdom to be able to read those charts and to be able to use those sextants that they had and their depth sounders and whatever other navigational tools they had. That just doesn't come naturally. They need wisdom to be able to know and understand how to use those things. And they needed discipline to keep going in the middle of a storm, when it starts getting dark, when you get blown off course, how to get back on. There's discipline involved there. And you know as well as I do that life requires discipline. And the most basic discipline that life requires every day is just getting up in the morning and taking a step out the door to face whatever that day is going to hold for you. We need discipline to keep on going, to keep putting one step in front of the other. Well, Proverbs 1 verse 2 says that this book and these Proverbs of Solomon, there's a number of Proverbs that were written by Solomon. There's other Proverbs that we have in this book that were written by other people. But these Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, were written for what? For attaining wisdom and discipline. Those are the first two things that it says. And for understanding words of insight. And then it goes on with some other things. But to attain wisdom and discipline. Wisdom that you need for life and the discipline that you need to keep going through life. I love what it says as we continue on through those verses that Cheryl read for us earlier. Verse 3, it says, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, for doing what is right and just and fair. Wouldn't you like to be known as a person who does what is right and just and fair? Somebody's got a question about something, they say, go see that guy. Go talk to her. She knows what's right, and she knows what's just, and she knows what's fair. For giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Young people, read the book of Proverbs. There's one for each day of the month. 31 chapters in there. Read the book of Proverbs. You'll get instruction there. Let the wise listen and add to their learning. Let the discerning get wisdom for understanding these things. Well, that's the first thing, the first principle that we want to draw from this morning. The second, here now are our set of four things. Four things that we as believers in Jesus Christ, as followers of the Scriptures, there are four things here, four principles out of here that we need to take and apply. And the first thing is this, commit your life to the Lord. You know, as a Christian, if you're here today and you're a Christian, you're a follower of Jesus Christ, your approach to life is going to be slightly different than people who are not followers of Christ. If you're here today and you're not a follower of Christ, you're just kind of checking out what this is all about, I think that's great, and I hope you enjoy and are enlightened by what you're hearing. But understand this, that there is a difference between a Christian and non-Christian perspective on life. There are going to be a lot of things that are the same. You know, a lot of principles are going to be the same one way or the other. But when we talk about what's good, you know, what are good friends? What are good decisions? What are good activities to be involved in? Sometimes that definition of good will depend on different things. And for the Christian, it all starts with God. And so that's why this first principle about committing your life to the Lord is so important. God, we believe that God is the author of life. Everything that you see all around you, all of creation, the trees, the birds, the sky, the sun, the fish that you caught and enjoyed this summer, and getting down into the microbiology of the human body and how all the chemicals interact with each other and hormones and everything that's in our system that works together. That didn't just happen. It is, to my mind, it is ludicrous to say that that just happened, that that just sprang out of some nonsensical eternal matter. Somebody had to bring that into being, and that is God. He is the author of life. He made you. He put all those desires and instincts and inbuilt all those needs that you experience in your life. He put them right into you for the purpose of life. Therefore, it stands to reason that he knows what's best for you. And so when it says here in Proverbs 1, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. You want to understand things? You want to understand how things work, why things happen the way they do, what's good for you, what's best for you? It starts with the fear of the Lord. When it talks about the fear of the Lord here, you know, we today in 2016, we don't like talking about fear. And we live in a kinder, gentler age, and everything has to be nicey-nicey for everybody. But the word fear is a word that pops up all through the Old Testament. All through the Old Testament talks about the fear of the Lord. And it's an expression. It's a Hebrew expression that means, it just refers to, it's an attitude of respect and trust for an authority that is higher than us, more powerful than us, but is a benevolent authority. We have the police force in our city, Winnipeg Police Force. And the police force, believe me, I know there's, you know, the press likes to pull out, you know, find that one bad apple out of the lot and paint the whole thing sometimes with this is wrong with our police department. Obviously, there's going to be some things that are wrong because we live in a fallen world. You're always going to find some example of something that's wrong. But believe me, we live in a benevolent society. And we have a benevolent and good police force. And we need to uphold them and pray for them. When I think of the police, I think that there's a healthy fear that I have for the police. I especially fear them when I'm driving down the highway and I see one. Right away, I look at my speedometer. You know, don't you? Am I doing anything that he can pull me over for? That's a healthy fear. That's good to have that. Good to have that in the back of your mind. But this fear is really just an attitude of respect and trust. I respect the police force, and for what they stand for. They're there to serve and protect us. And you know what? I trust them. And unfortunately, we have laws in this country that if something does go wrong and somebody does, one of them does misbehave, there are laws that will bring that back into line again. But for us, God is our starting point. We respect him. We respect him and we trust him. We believe that he knows what's good, he knows what's best. And that's the first thing, is to commit your life to the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. All through the book of Proverbs, you hear about this contrast between the wise and the foolish, the wise and the foolish. And basically, the foolish are those that say, I don't need your advice, I don't need your so-called words of wisdom, I'm going to go my own way, I'm going to make my own decisions. That's the fool. And over again in Proverbs, we hear about the fool and how the end of that person is destruction. Well, second thing that we need to understand for charting a good course is this, to listen to godly mentors. And when it comes to mentors in our lives, right from the earliest age, your parents were, or if you're young still, your parents are, the primary instructors in life. Parents are the primary instructors in life for all things in the growing up and development of that child. They're responsible for teaching life skills as simple as how to use a knife and a fork, how to look both ways before you cross the road. Parents need to take these responsibilities seriously. Life skills like how to handle money, how to work. When your dad asks you to go out and cut the lawn, you may not like it right now, but he's developing in you and you are learning through that. Work habits, skills for life that you're going to need later on. Parents also teach morality and spiritual values. And this is where for Christians today, there's beginning to be a conflict, because our society is drifting further and further away from the principles of God when it comes to moral instruction and spiritual values. Our society is moving further and further away from that. And so as we distance ourselves from that, we are going to be isolated and ostracized many times as people who are different and odd and don't fit in. You know what? Take the words of Scripture seriously. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in Him. And as parents, continue to teach those moral and spiritual values to your children. This is the role of godly parents, to teach these things. And you know, if your parents were not Christians, if they were not godly, then it's important to find a spiritual father or spiritual mother who can teach you these things. That's where mentorship comes in. And it says, you know, I love these words, "Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching." You can hear there this appeal. My son, listen to what I'm telling you. Listen to what your mother is saying. We know what you're going through. We know what's out there. We know the dangers. We are trying to give you instruction. And you know that the balance for a parent always is to give that instruction, to guide and guard the behavior, and yet still do it in a way that allows them to release themselves ultimately when they're ready to fly on their own. But when it says this in Proverbs, "Listen, my son," that's a word directly to any child or young person who's sitting here right now today. You see those words? You listen to what your father says. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. It will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. Well, what's that all about? Well, the garland, we don't wear garlands anymore. But the garland was just, you know, that wreath of olive laurel that would go around the athlete's head. It's a garland. It's like a crown of leaves and branches that they would wear. It's a sign of victory. And, you know, a parent's instruction to their children is to help them to be victorious in life and to be able to succeed in life, whether it's at school or in athletics or at their work when they finally get out there on their own. And the chain around your neck, that's a sign of wealth and favor. That somebody can look at you and they can look up to you and respect you as someone who has had good training, good teaching, if you adhere to your father's teaching, your father's instruction, and your mother's teaching. The advice from godly mentors will guide you and help you to chart a good course. It's important to have those. When charting a good course, though, there are certain things that we need to stay away from. And that's where, you know, there's always a positive and a negative side to things. Stay away from certain things. And the Bible is very clear many times, and especially in this chapter here, that you are to avoid ungodly companions. And here we have the voice of the father again speaking to his son. My son, if sinners entice you, do not give in to them. Do not give in to them. How many parents have been in utter anguish over the fact that they teach their children what is right and just and fair, and they find themselves some friends that don't hold those same values, and they start to go off in a new direction because their friends have got an influence over them that the parents don't have anymore? Because, of course, parents are uncool, don't know what's going on, you know, they're from the old generation. You know, this is what's happening now today, Dad. This is how we do it today. And they get themselves into all kinds of trouble because they go against what their parents have taught them. And instead, they've been enticed. They've been tempted and drawn away by sinners to do something that is wrong and evil and ungodly. And he goes on in this whole portion here, and he says, if they say, come along with us, let's lie in wait for someone's blood, let's waylay some harmless soul. I mean, that's pretty bad stuff. You might not have anybody who's encouraging you to come along with them to commit murder. But there's all kinds of other evil things that might be involved that people are enticing you to as well. You know, on January 13th, 2012, it's not a day that will stand in history forever, but on that day, there was a cruise ship called the Costa Concordia. that sailed through the Mediterranean and came a little too close to the rocks that day. We all remember that story. The Costa Concordia had the side of the ship was gouged open with these rocks. It drifted for a couple of hours before it began to list over and almost sank until it got hung up on the rocks again. That captain had sailed that way many times before. That cruise ship had taken that route many times before, but this time they got a little too complacent. They thought, we know the way to go. Let's go a little closer. Let's give the people something to see. And they got gouged open with those rocks. 4,200 people were on board that cruise ship. It's the most number of people that have ever in history had to evacuate a ship. 32 people lost their lives as a result of that captain's complacency and carelessness. And what this verse is saying is, look, sinners out there, people that entice you to do evil, they're like those rocks. They're like those rocks that are going to tear apart your ship and are going to cause you to sink and destroy your life. It amazes me why people hang out with certain other kinds of people. You know, there are people who are just toxic. You know, they're just, everything that comes out of their mouth is abusive and angry and volatile. And why would people hang around with somebody like that? They're going to be among these sinners, these rocks that will destroy your life. There are people who are negative. There are people who are manipulative. They're manipulating you. You know, if you feel like, man, every time I talk to that person, every time I leave after talking to that person, I feel like I'm all bent out of shape and torn up inside, and I feel like they're getting me to do... If you feel like that, if you feel like you're being manipulated, you are. And if you're being manipulated, if that person is a manipulative kind of person, stay away from them. They call you up, hey, you want to... No, I can't. No, not this time. Stay away from those kinds of people. They are the rocks that will destroy your ship and destroy your life as well. Fourth thing is this. What's the positive? Well, seek after wisdom. An old lady, that sounds like such a bad term, doesn't it? A lady of advanced years was being interviewed by a television reporter, and she was asked about wisdom. How do you get wisdom in life? She said, well, you get wisdom... Or no, she's talking about the importance of wisdom. And she said, you know, wisdom will keep you from getting mistakes. She said, well, how do you get wisdom? Well, by making mistakes. There's a lot of truth to that. You know, we sometimes make mistakes. Oh, okay, now I know how not to do it, so the next time I'm going to stay away from that. But you know, there's a saying out there, learn from other people's mistakes. Because you're not going to live long enough to make all those mistakes. Okay? There are too many mistakes that people have made. Learn from those mistakes. Those people have wisdom. That's where the teaching and the instruction of our mothers and fathers comes in. They've been through those things. Learn from those. Learn from other people. And wisdom is something that we are to seek after. It says here in verse 20, wisdom calls aloud in the street. She raises her voice in the public squares. The question is anybody listening? At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. In the gateways of the city, she makes her speech. Then it goes on and it talks about the wisdom that is being presented there. But do people listen for it? Wisdom is something that must be sought out. It doesn't come naturally. That's why we need parents to teach children how to be wise when it comes to life. When we think of the street and the public squares and this world is filled with so many different voices, with so many different messages, and it is so important for you and I to develop receptors that can pick up the words of wisdom rather than words of confusion and destruction. Well, where do we get those receptors from? Well, go to the source of wisdom. What did we say originally? It's the Lord. And we've got God's words written for us right here to seek out and to learn, to read and to understand. And so this source of wisdom is found in God's word. It's found from godly teachers. That's the mentors again. that we learn from. And experience. We do have some experiences in life that we have to learn from. There's no question about that. And you've all heard, well, if he won't listen to my instruction, he's going to have to make the mistake and learn by himself. That's what happens. That's where the experience of mistakes comes in. Charting a good course is going to lead you to either a good destination or a bad destination. You know, so many times I've talked to people in various situations in life, and something I've often heard is they look at what's happening around them and they say to themselves, how in the world did I ever end up here? When I look back over my life and I see all the things that I've done and I thought I was doing okay, and now all of a sudden everything is falling apart around me, whether it's finances or relationships or family life or work or whatever, and their life is in a shambles. I say, nobody starts out life, nobody starts out their working life saying, after 55 years, I want to retire penniless and broke and living on the streets. Nobody starts out like that. But you can make decisions and you can chart a course that will take you to that destination. And that's where, again, the principles of God's word, when we listen to these things, when we follow this navigational chart that God has given to us, it's going to keep us from that bad destination. In the end, we read here that fools will be destroyed. Those who seek their own way, those who resist and reject the words of wisdom, will ultimately be destroyed. Verse 32, it says this, for the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. Now, it's not saying, God isn't saying here, listen to my words or I will kill you. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, if you don't listen to my words and my wisdom, you'll end up dead or you'll end up destroyed. Death and destruction. The way of the fools. The way of those who refuse to listen to God's words of wisdom. The wise, it tells us, will prosper. The wise will prosper. Over and over again in Proverbs, we read about the wise who listen to words of instruction. The wise who develop discretion. The wise who hear the way that they should go and walk in it. Those people are wise. They're learning from what others have told them. It says in verse 33, but whoever listens to me, this is God speaking through wisdom, whoever listens to me will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm. Through these coming weeks, we want to see and hear what God says about wisdom. We want to see and hear and understand how these principles apply to our lives at whatever stage of life we might be at. We want to make those wise choices so that we can rest assured that things will turn out well, and in the end, we prosper. We prosper, and there's many different ways of prospering. I'm going to ask Rick and the team to come up at this time. We're going to sing a song called The Days of Elijah. Now, we just went through about a month-long series throughout the month of August looking at the life of Elijah. You know, I thought to myself as I thought about this topic of wisdom that there's a man who knew how to stand for God. There's a man who had committed his life to the Lord Jehovah and was following him in all of his ways, who could stand up to evil, who could resist the evil of his day and live a life of wisdom. It's not always easy. It wasn't always easy for Elijah. He had his difficulties. But in the end, he had the seal of God's approval on his life, didn't he? As God whisked him up to heaven there in that chariot of fire and took him to be with himself. That's what we want, to live lives of wisdom, lives that honor God, lives that speak to our commitment to him. Let's stand together. Rick, please lead us.